Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello, everyone. Welcoming Kevin Cole to the Sports Creative Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Davis Maddock. We are here, of course, to chat some prospects. We are the combine is upon us. Everyone has descended upon Indianapolis. They're tweeting photos of their steaks from the steakhouse, and they're everyone has to very casually drop that they're in Indianapolis. In some sort of way. So we're here. I am of course one of the people that loves the combine, the underwear Olympics. That stuff is for me. And NFL teams care about the underwear Olympics, Kevin.
Yeah, I think they do. Although I don't know about you, I preferred when they didn't try to make it such a primetime later event. In the week event.
Yeah,
because I mean, I get it from the NFL's perspective, right? It's more eyeballs. Obviously, you're going to get more eyeballs watching this thing on television. But I'm wondering if they lose any of the viral kind of insider frenzy that goes on as it does when people are really plugged into Twitter during the daytime. Yes. And you're seeing this stuff here, because I felt a little bit more disconnected to some of this stuff. At least I think I'm going to feel more disconnected to this stuff if I'm pretending to actually have a life and to do things in the evening while some of these drills are going on, as opposed to in the past, it would have been like 10 a.m. or noontime. You're just injecting it straight into your veins all day long.
No, it's unquestionably way better to be having it at noon. Like I want to know that George Pickens is running, a 4.3, and I want to know it I want to know it right now. I want to be tweeting it when I'm at my computer. I'm not going to be at my computer when George Pickens runs a 4.3. And that is, that's a little disappointing.
Well, a lot of people are going to be gone from the combine too, by the time they're actually doing some of these events. It's funny. I'm not going to the combine. I went to the combine a couple of years ago. It's a great experience to do, I would say. It's very like football centric, but I am going to the Sloan Sports Analytics Conference this year, which I didn't go to in 2020, but I'd gone a couple prior to that. It depends on who you are. I think for me, like I'm not like I'm a big fish anywhere, but I'm a little bit more of a big fish maybe in Sloan, talking to all the little like college nerds who want to have this sort of position, than going to the combine where, you're like the wedgie. It's back to wedgie zone here for the nerds there.
That's tape grinder. That's tape grinder central.
Yes,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, it is cool just to see these dudes, like to see head coaches and to see GMs and see other people just casually strolling through or at the bar, or to see your boy Jerry Jones at Prime, the main steakhouse there. I'll tell you another time about some Jerry Jones stories from that.
I can't imagine. So you have begun modeling out the running backs and the wide receivers for this class, correct?
That is correct. Yeah, the first stab at doing it. And of course, we'll have the combine information. We'll solidify some of these assumed draft positions, and all that stuff will happen and change around a lot in the coming months. But yeah, this is the first stab to get a temperature check on where we are.
Okay. So temperature check. There seems to be a discrepancy between what the nerds, and I don't even know what level of nerddom you consider yourself, because there's definitely a difference between fantasy football nerds, like dynasty nerds, and then there's like the modeling nerds, and that those are actually two separate things. And then there's the film watching nerds, and film watchers, don't kid yourself, you are also a nerd. Like
what about those sickos who play Devy that are like scouting junior high kids?
Yeah, I mean, I was in a Devy league during the heights of quarantine, and I messaged Scott Fish last offseason. I said, I know this is the worst. I know there are hundreds of people doing this to you, but I can't do this. I cannot be, tracking college football. I can't be paying a 2026 first round pick for Braylon Allen, who is not going to be in the NFL for 3 years. Like, I just can't. So anyway, Treylon Burks is actually contentious, right? There's a difference between what the film people say about him. You know, us dynasty nerds, he's young. He was super productive in the SEC. He's coming out early. We expect him to have a good combine. So where do you have Treylon Burks?
I mean, I have him at the top, but you say that there's a lot of disconnect there. Maybe that's the case. And I know that some of the assumed draft positions that I'm using on this stuff, it's a little bit fluid.
That's where the disconnect is coming from, where I think, you know, Dynasty Nerd Twitter has him as a top 10 pick. And it sounds like maybe the NFL is not as enthusiastic.
I mean, the thing is, the NFL doesn't seem to be that enthusiastic about either the running backs or the wide receivers. It's not like last season where, what do we have? The first 7 picks were all offensive players. And you had, you know, multiple skill position players. You had Waddle, you had Chase, you had eventually Pitts. A Devontae Smith, you had Devonta. Pitts, you had all those guys going so early. And it wasn't like the defensive players were god awful up there too. It was just that the offensive players were that good. So we don't see that this time. There's just the lack of high end talent. And so what I'm saying to you, Trey Burks is number one. I have Trey Burks as number one. I have this like on a percentile basis for the projections, and he's, you know, 95th, 96th percentile, whereas someone like Chase would have been between 99 and 100 percentile, just to give a frame of reference for like how different of these guys are. But part of that is plugging in their assumed draft position, and we're assuming that Burks is going to go in the middle of the first round as opposed to a lock to go in the top 10 like Chase was at this point a year ago.
Which is, that's sort of what we're trying to answer right now is Jamar Chase or, is Treylon Burks a Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb, Jamar Chase sort of immediate superstar guy who, when you take him at, you know, I guess depending on if it's super flex or regular or whatever, you know, at the 101 or the 102 or whatever, is he going to be that guy that is, you know, it's possible within 12 months as a top 12 overall player or whatever, you know, and obviously contingent on landing spot and things like that. And my sense is probably not, but that it's just like a gut feel thing.
Yeah. I mean, I can't point to anything that really concerns me that much. I mean, the one thing that you could point to is the stuff I'm going to be the worst at, which is, you know, nuance. It's my favorite terminology that's used by guys who are grinding it. They'll say he doesn't have great nuance to his routes. And maybe that's also partially related to a little bit of gimmicky usage. If you're saying that he was constantly lining up in the slot, despite the fact that he's probably going to weigh 220 pounds and run a fast 40 and all that stuff.
That's what people said about Rager, right? That was one of the things about Rager
There was some concern with Justin Jefferson as a senior, as a junior also in his final season. So I'm actually doing this analysis now. It'll come out over the next couple of days where I kind of clustered all these different prospects. We only have it going back to 2017 where we're actually tracking whether or not someone is pressed at the snap. Even if they're not targeted, if they're pressed at the snap, we only have it if they're targeted before that. Okay. So I'm looking at all these different guys and, Burks was only pressed 10% of the time, whereas someone like Jamar Chase was, you know, 50% of the time that he was facing press coverage in his last couple of seasons. But when Burks has been pressed, he's been the most efficient guy out there, and he's been doing it in a very similar way to these alpha X receivers, where I think his average depth of target was 16.5-17 yards down the field. He's winning contested catches when he needs to. And his yards per route run is just ridiculous when he's pressed. It's over 6 over the last couple of seasons, which just blows away anyone else. So you'd like to see more of it, but there's not really evidence that he can't do it. He just wasn't asked to do it a whole lot. And you don't know if that's, you know, you'd love to see it and you'd love to have it, but
right.
But, you know, there's nothing about his physical profile or his numbers when he did it that says this guy can't do it.
Which, I mean, right. I guess that as we've really evolved, like the NFL has evolved in how they use wide receivers. You know, like 10 years ago, Drake London is the number one wide receiver in this class, and it's not close. The NFL loved guys like that. I love guys like that, right? Team big wide receiver. That was such a big thing. And we, you know, partly because teams are playing 3 wide receivers more, partly because teams are spreading it out so much. Like, being a slot wide receiver used to be like derogatory in a fantasy football context. Like, you didn't want slot wide receivers. Now we love when guys are in the slot. Like, we want CeeDee Lamb in the slot all the time for Dallas. You know, we want Kyle Pitts to be in the slot all the time for the Atlanta Falcons. We like when Justin Jefferson goes inside because they at Cooper Kupp, you know, did so much of his damage out of the slot and just had like the best fantasy football wide receiver season ever. Like, how funny is it that Cooper Kupp and Calvin Johnson literally could not be, you know, more different. And those are the two guys with like the best fantasy football season for wide receivers ever. So maybe that's good for Burks.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on, like, we're talking about what value means, like, production wise. Yeah, I think it's been for a while now that there's been a recognition going into the slot is not going to hurt your production. In fact, it could enhance your production. I mean, you mentioned Cooper Kupp. He's the guy that you would point to there. I think he was pressed. I was looking at some of the top guys, like how often they're pressed this season. It was something like 20 to 25% for him versus, you know, 40-ish percent for someone like Ja'Marr Chase. So he still is functioning in a similar way to what he did in college, which is to avoid that press coverage. But it doesn't matter. He's offensive player of the year. He had one of the best seasons ever. At the same time, I think where the NFL is really still telling us how they prefer these guys who can win on the outside is, yes, in the draft, but not as much in the draft. I think they shifted a bit more in the draft, but still in how much they're paying these guys, I feel like they're telling us someone on there. I mean, maybe Cooper Kupp will now in the future be like a guy that you would pay right. The most in the league for, but it's probably still going to end up being like a DeAndre Hopkins type is going to get this huge contract. Even Keenan Allen, who performed so well, he's got some pretty good contracts, but he was never quite seen as being the same guy as these guys who are on the outside.
Because Keenan has never scored touchdowns.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem too. But yeah, I think there is like a replaceability aspect to it that you can put someone else in there who you can draft in the third round or fourth round.
In there. Yeah.
Yeah. You can draft much later, or you could spend a lot less money on and get 85% of the production. Whereas you can't do that and throw someone on the outside.
Yeah. So what is your top five and in what order?
Okay. So top five, I thought I had this up. Apologies. So top five, Burks is number one, but he's very close to Jameson Williams. And
that's my take is Jameson.
I think Williams would be number. I think Williams would be number one. I don't model in the ACL tear, but right. His expected draft position is in the mid 20s as opposed to 16 for Burks. So it's not like a huge difference, but it's enough to basically even them out and make Burks slightly better on here. But Williams would have been number one if not for that. They're both early declares, but he's a year younger than Burks. So I think that has a little bit of weight in here. And he's just been more of a field stretcher. And when I start to dig into some of the routes specific sort of things, what he's done there and his ability to kind of win down the field gives him a bit of a boost over Burks. So again, I could go with either guy here, but I think Williams, you just wish you could have gotten, you know, a blazing 40 time out of him, a little bit better draft position, that sort of stuff. But maybe you're actually getting a discount here, having to write off his rookie season or a significant portion of his rookie season, likely with the ACL tear.
I would not be surprised if Jameson Williams is the best wide receiver of this class. He absolutely unbelievable production in the SEC, right? Like against guys, like all the corners he played against. I mean, not all of them, that's an exaggeration, but lots of guys who are going to be in the NFL. And I was talking with Patrick Crane last week, and he said something that I thought was very astute, which is that you literally know exactly what his role is going to be in the NFL, at least to start. And, you know, obviously he'll be able to build on that if he is really good, but he is going to come in and whatever team takes him is going to be like, go, right? Nine routes, post routes, like just get past the safeties. Like, a painful lesson that some of us have had to learn is that the guys who have to be drafted in very specific circumstances, guys like Laviska Shenault, guys like Rondale Moore, they have to have a role created for them in the offense. They're not good enough to just go win wherever they get put, have a much more difficult time converting in the NFL. And that, you know, I don't have that concern at all about Jameson Williams.
Yeah, no, I agree. It'd be interested to see. I don't know if he's weighing in at the combine or what that even means, but I have like an assumed weight in here too, where I'm just ripping that off of what we have in our big board information. I'm not sure where that's being pulled from. Maybe it's from the school website. So his assumed weight is, I had it here at 189 pounds. This is pretty specific here, but 189 pounds. So if he comes in around that, obviously I think that's fine. You know, it's nowhere close to like the Marquise Brown sort of 160 dripping wet.
Devonta Smith.
Yeah, Devonta Smith was a little bit different of a guy. I wasn't that concerned. I think I had Smith as being the second highest projection coming out above Waddle and some other guys. So I wasn't as concerned about it, but for Williams is when, you know, it'd be really nice if he came in around 190 here too, rather than having those size concerns.
So is the rest of your top five London, Alave, Wilson in some order?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Again, I do put draft position in here, so it's going to stick rigidly too. Yeah. And there's just not like a super producer type that's going to burst out. What I would say is that the one guy who's right on the outside looking in of the top five, but is very, very close, is Wandale Robinson. And his expected draft position is in the 50s, as opposed to these other guys that are no worse than the mid 20s. So
what do you have his size at?
185 pounds.
So I'm worried.
You think that's aggressive?
Well, I'm worried that's aggressive. I'm also worried he might be like 5'8" too. I'm worried like, so yeah. Corrine and I do this show last week and we spent like 15 minutes talking about Wandale, and then someone replies to the tweet out of the show, a picture they took next to Wandale. Uh-huh. And I don't know what it was about this specific picture, but he looked so small in a way that he doesn't look small, like watching him play at Kentucky. And the other interesting thing about him is I guess maybe you don't have that same concern. Like, I just wasn't even thinking about size concerns because he was recruited as a running back. He had more carries than receptions his first season at Nebraska. So it just felt like, well, yeah, if you can play running back, you can't be that small. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I think. I mean, I see him as being, if you look at the guys who went like Elijah Moore, Rondale Moore, I mean, very different players, obviously, as far as Rondale Moore in particular, but the fact that those guys were drafted fairly high makes me think the NFL is warming a bit to this type of guy. But I don't think Robinson is going to be an early second round pick.
No,
like we saw for, you know,
unless some team, you know, feels the way the Cardinals felt about Rondale or about Andy Isabella. Right. Like it would require some team like really falling in love with him in a way that you have to do with these out. I mean, you know, Mecole Hardman, smaller guy, but really fast. And I mean, I love Wandale. I'm going to take him in all these dynasty drafts, but I have the same concerns about him that I now retroactively should have had about Rondale and LaVisca, which is that if a team just asks him to be a normal slot wide receiver, I don't know how good he's going to be at that.
Yeah, I mean, another positive thing here in a similar way to when I was talking about Burks is looking at him against press coverage. I mean, he's only 10% of the time. Again, it's roughly 10% of the time he faced press coverage, but he did average 4.4 yards per route run. He did have an average depth of target of 16 yards. And 40% of these targets were contested. So it wasn't like he was just roaming free on some of these. A small sample, you don't know, but there's a much more dangerous bucket of player who are similar to what Wandale Robinson is doing in other circumstances. But then once they're pressed, they just turn into
poop.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and these are guys that this other cluster, actually Elijah Moore kind of falls into this other cluster, to be honest, but Elijah Moore, Kadarius Toney, Rondale Moore, Tutu Atwell, Paris Campbell. These are the guys that I had falling that were drafted in the first two rounds that fell into this, like a similar usage against press sort of player, but poor efficiency and much lower depth of targets for these guys. So they're just not going down the field as not able to win down the field against press coverage in college.
Which is, I mean, you do have to be able to do that in the NFL. So who's the Jeff Janis? Who is the guy that, which is so funny because I actually talked to him the other day for the first time in forever. I need to make a side by side of him and DK Metcalf running the 40 of the combine because Janis was faster, which is amazing.
Yeah. You know, like I feel like Robinson's probably my favorite guy for like I'm somewhat certain that he'll provide some value there. It's really hard. Like I'm just not that high on a lot of guys here. I mean, I'm low. I could point to guys that I'm low on, maybe more so than others. Like Pickens. Let's hear it. Pickens, I mean, I who knows?
No, you're, dude, you know? No.
Pickens. Yeah, I'm just overthinking that one.
You're overthinking it. I am planting the flag on George Pickens. It's like the guy had a 31% dominator rating as a 17/18-year-old at Georgia, tied for the team lead in touchdowns with DeAndre Swift. And he was sort of the consensus top wide receiver of this class before he hurt his knee. He came back. He didn't look that good. And he's actually one of those guys. He was talking at the combine today and he said, yeah, I expect to run like a 4.3. And if he runs a 4.3 at that size with how good he was as a really young guy at Georgia, I am going to have a very hard time not being irrationally exuberant about him.
I guess, but I don't think you're going to be the only one is the problem. I mean, I think I'd even be like further out when it comes to him, if he runs some ridiculous 40 and goes flying up the board. Cause I mean, okay. So like the stats that I look at more than anything, like the assumed draft position for here, I have him being in the mid 40s. So again, if that's something that pops up into being like a first round sort of guy, it's going to help his projection, but I don't think it's going to help it nearly as much as what his like market price is going to be. The second thing is the career share of receiving yards, and career share being bigger than your best share, because larger sample, how early you're producing, all that sort of stuff goes into it. Now I know he's missing all this time, so that's his problem. Still, 20% is like low compared to anyone, and he only has one season where he basically had a 25% market share. And you're right, he was really good really early, but I don't know, man. I don't know. You got that. And you got the, like, didn't you have some off field issues also?
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't dug deep enough in them to know specifically what they are. And
I just know he got booted off he got like suspended or something. Right.
Well, and also I have come to take a different approach to some of the off the field stuff, because it became clear during the 2020 draft class that some of the guys' off field issues were like, fuck the racist structure of the NCAA and the head coaching system. Like,
well, who are we talking about specifically?
It
here?
Was the Mike Leach guy. I don't even. Oh, now I gotta look this up. But there was, okay. Now I gotta go look this up.
All right. Don't get too woke on me here, but
I'm not trying to get too woke on you, but basically it was like Mike Leach was dinging one of his guys because they were super involved in the BLM stuff. And so he was telling everyone who would listen how shitty this kid is. And, it turned out to not be the case.
Well, I'm just saying we've had like, I'm trying to think who are the success stories for guys who A, off-field issues in college, B, were not like killed as far as their draft position is concerned, right? Because that's my thing.
DJ Shark is the would be
is he
the
good?
First name. Yeah.
Is he good?
Yeah.
We'll
yeah.
see.
It was Kylan Hill. Kylan Hill.
Okay,
was Kylan,
yeah, who, I know you're talking about. Yeah. But I mean, you could say something like, oh, you know, what happened to Tyreek Hill? But whatever, he went in the fifth round or something. But I'm just thinking more of, you know, I'm trying to think of who now. God, I had the name. I just had it a second ago and I lost it. Who was the big guy who went to Tennessee and then just totally flamed out? Adoree' Green Beckham.
Yeah.
And, you know, that type or, oh God, there's so many different guys.
There are so many who fall in this category. Yeah.
Or they end up doing okay for a while and then it does. I guess Dez Bryant is probably a guy you could point to who's
a big one. Yeah.
Who would have been like a top 10, top 15 pick, but then ended up going in the back half of the first round because of that sort of stuff.
And of course Jerry Jones was the guy. Jerry Jones don't care.
He brought Hardy, right? Didn't he bring in Greg Hardy for
all the guys? He brings in all the guys. He doesn't care. So point being, I'm not sweating that. I'm not sweating it.
Do you have a guy? Do you have a guy who's like a long shot sort? Because again, I didn't go too deep though on this. I admit I'm not going to go super deep because we don't have good assumed draft positions for guys once we start to get outside of the top like 100 pick sort of range. Do you have a guy that you like? There Christian Watson, maybe a little bit. I don't know.
So he is more. He's one of them. But again, also I will find this guy after some guy weighs, you know, 216 pounds and runs a 4.3 and a 6.2. Like, you know, that'll be my guy. But a couple of the guys who I think could fill that role. One of them is Sky Moore, who just had this unbelievable final season at Western Michigan, 1,300 yards, 10 touchdowns on, you know, a really bad team. Like the next closest receiver on the team had 768 yards and 6 touchdowns. So he like doubled.
Yeah, you know, I messed up my, I have him like way too high in my rankings because he wasn't on the, he didn't have an assumed draft position on, on this Grinding the Mocks, but so it defaulted to the PFF ranking, and PFF has a ranked 30th on the big board, so he's way up there at PFF, where I don't know, man, it kind of smells a little bit like, I don't know, some other guys who were pretty high, we were pretty high on last year, like maybe Jalen Darden or someone like that, like they grade well because a little shimmy shake and other things that they do there, but I don't know if that necessarily is what you want for a prospect versus some dude who just beasts someone on the other side.
Well, yeah, I mean, that is fair. And then the other one who I'm pretty interested in is David Bell, who played with Rondale Moore the last couple of years of his career. Super productive, really young, super productive final season. I mean, he was super productive his entire career. You know, again, playing in a very defensive conference, playing on a team that did not throw the ball a ton. So for example, I mean, this is one of my favorite things to do is just to go look at the raw numbers. I feel like it helps contextualize it more. So David Bell, his final season had 93 receptions and 1300 yards. Next closest on the team was 57 receptions and 730 yards, which is just like, I mean, that is so much more productive than anyone else in that environment. And so, and especially because he played with Rondale, who is a second round pick, you know, and obviously outproduced him because Rondale barely played at Purdue after his freshman year because he was hurt all the time. And I guess if you really wanted to go there, also more productive than Bryson Hopkins, an NFL tight end.
Yeah. You know, now that I'm looking here, I should have mentioned Bell earlier. He's pretty close to Robinson, right below Robinson in my projection. And his draft position, his assumed draft position, is in the 50s too. So yeah, so he's definitely some guy who's a bit higher. Let's talk about Drake London for a second because,
right.
Okay. So here's my concerns is that he had a really strong limited year of in 8 games this last year. He didn't really do too much before that. But his market share receiving yards, 43%, is pretty crazy. And in some ways you could say that it's understated. Like it's, you should almost adjust up for the fact that he was playing in these games where SC was throwing for like 400 yards, and it's hard to get above 40% of the market share if you're throwing for that many yards in a game. Like it's easy if your team's throwing for 175 yards, it's much easier to get 40% of that than it is to get 40% of 400 yards.
Much, much easier for David Bell to get the market share he did than Drake London playing in that air raid system at USC. I mean, the concern I have about Drake London is that most of the guys of that type of player we've seen recently have done poorly. When your job is to go win contested catches, you know, NFL teams just don't even really do that anymore. Like what offenses run where that's a staple of what they do?
Yeah, I was a little concerned. You know, the first step of my film scouting is to like throw on the Just Bombs the video like highlight reel.
Huge fan of the Just Bombs production.
So reels. I was watching London, and I was getting a little concerned by it. I was like, we're, you know, 2 minutes into this thing, and I don't think I've seen anything but a contested catch.
Yeah, we need a slant
the entire time. But I did look. Okay, so this is another thing where if for these contested catch guys, it's not really what they do against press that I found more signal in, but it's what they do when they have off coverage. So he's pressed a lot. He a lot of contested catches against press, but when you look at what they do against off coverage, he's not nearly as reliant upon contested catches. Whereas like the poster child, the poster cautionary tale of JJ Arcega-Whiteside here.
Literally, that's what it is. I hadn't been able to put I hadn't been able to put my thumb on it until right now. And now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh, yep, you know, Pac-12 wide receiver. Yeah.
So he was pretty normal. Arcega-Whiteside was pretty normal against press coverage as far as how often he was relying upon contested catches. But even against off coverage, he's like off the charts for how much he was relying upon contested catches. Like he didn't really do anything except for run down the field and like box out no matter how he was being played. So that doesn't seem to be as big of a concern for London. So I was happy to see that, because there are other guys who you could maybe put in that sort of bucket. Like, I don't know, T. Higgins or someone like that is maybe someone you would question whether or not they can really separate and be successful. And he's been pretty good. So yeah, I think he's more similar to like a T. Higgins type than a Arcega-Whiteside.
Yeah. You know, I think that makes some sense. And then what are your thoughts about the Ohio State wide receivers?
I think I would prefer Olave if his draft status was a little bit better. I mean, right now I have him slightly below Wilson, but it's only because Wilson on here looks like he could go first. He could be the wide receiver one, and Olave's like 30, you know, in the
right
27 to 30 sort of range. But there's nothing I'm looking at numbers wise that seems to matter to me. I've heard that part of the issue, and maybe this is a good thing that I don't follow along too much, because I think maybe it gets pumped up a little bit too much. It was as if he was like leapfrogged by Wilson and faded out as far as his importance in the passing game. But again, it's like, for me, it's like you shake up the mix of games, and depending upon how it happens to lay out, whether it's like you're very good at the end versus very good at the beginning versus, you know, 50-50, you get much, much different impressions of players when it could just be like some randomness to it also.
Right. Which, you know, we don't love to do the randomness.
Well, it's not fun to talk about. Like, it wouldn't be fun if you had a podcast, which is basically my podcast, where you just come on every week and you're like, okay, you know what just happened? Let's not get excited about it. Let's just remember it's 90% random and 10% signal. And let's just not change our opinion at all over what just happened. So that doesn't get people excited.
No, the people are not nearly as interested in that. So my thing would just be is like, I get these Ohio State wide receivers wrong all the time, and the NFL gets them wrong too, right? Devin Smith was a first round draft pick, and then Terry McLaurin was a third round draft pick. And it's like, you know, because the Ohio State, I mean, they play in like two competitive games a year, basically, is what ends up happening. So like all their games are basically like the equivalent of Alabama versus, you know, Fordham State or whatever. I will say, just from my Just Bombs production, watching of Garrett Wilson, he seems unbelievable. I mean, he just seemed very similar to Jameson Williams, where it's just like, I don't know how you tackle that guy.
Well, there's more of a hive, definitely. It's more of a Garrett Wilson hive that I've seen out there, but you know, maybe that'll change a bit when these guys both run at the combo. Are they running? I know that London's not, but I don't know if I assume they're running.
I don't know at all. I mean, if Garrett Wilson puts up a 4.38 or whatever, that's going to do wonders for him. But I just don't really have any opinions other than that. I probably won't go out of my way to draft a ton of these guys. What about Jahan Dotson? The Penn State guy.
He's kind of low on here. He's low-ish for me because I have an assumed draft position of 35, but then I have him below Wandale Robinson and David Bell. So, you know, not awful or anything, but there's nothing that jumps out that much as being excitable. I mean, I had pretty good market share numbers, but his yards per route run was pretty low, so he's doing it on somewhat of a high volume there, or just weak efficiency amongst other receivers on the team, I guess, is how he was able to get those big market share numbers.
Yeah, I mean, and he's also he's kind of one of those guys where I wonder if he does post like an absurd 40 time, because that was kind of what happened to KJ Hamler, right? They're honestly, you know, teammates, incredibly similar. Now, Dotson didn't really break out until his final season. I mean, his first 1,000-yard season was year four prospect. Like we don't love the non-early declares as much.
Yeah, I don't know. Hamler, I liked Hamler a lot. Embarrassing amount, actually.
Well, Hamler had the he had the special teams production too, which we like. He was like an unbelievable returner.
Yeah, and the dude gets open. I mean, he didn't really have a lot of help at quarterback. Obviously, he had the injury here. He's had some pretty nasty looking drops, but then again, you know, you have nasty looking drops because you're wide open. The fuck open down yeah. down the field. So, I think he just had a bad, it wasn't a great fit with Teddy, but even then he was getting open. I feel like he could have done something this season if it wasn't for the injury.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll see.
I don't have any real sleepers yet on this class. There are a couple like slot guys who, you know, if Britton Covey gets drafted by the New England Patriots or Ty Freifogel from Indiana, like if either of those guys get drafted by a team that like, you know, really loves their slot wide receiver or whatever, I could see them, you know, picking up, you know, being a third round rookie pick or whatever that pays off. But yeah, I don't know. And
tough.
Also,
it's tough. Sleepers for wide receivers are tough.
Yeah. Well, and I need to know how fast they are first. That's a big part. It's a big part of my hashtag process. And unfortunately though, not a great running back class, in my opinion. I just don't see any of these guys really being stars, really, I guess. I mean, and Breece Hall and Spiller are gonna get, you know, they're gonna be go before anyone else. And I guess Spiller is crazy fast. Like I just saw that he's like still competitively running track at like a football weight, which is wild.
Yeah. Yeah. This class is even worse than the wide receiver class in terms of like the top guy. So I have Breece Hall as the top guy here, but his percentile is more like 91st percentile as opposed to last time we had, you know, Najee Harris and Javonte Williams, more like 97th sort of percentile type of guys. So he's a bit down. I do think Hall is pretty interesting. I mean, over three receptions per game, pretty productive, should be, looks like a pretty big dude. I saw a comp for him that I liked a lot, having watched him, of DeMarco Murray. And
oh, yeah.
And like, cause his concern I've seen from some people is that he runs too straight up. And he does kind of run straight up, but he seems like he's pretty fast and explosive. And I feel like that sort of stuff, guys who are going to grind out an extra half yard, is a little bit overvalued by people anyway.
Yeah. And Breece Hall also caught a ton of passes. I mean, 82 receptions in three seasons, 56 touchdowns. I mean, he video game numbers at the running, like, I mean, not that it's a straight one-to-one translation. And also, you know, held up, you know, didn't miss any games throughout that entire, that's big. You know, knowing that, at least knowing that guys are coming in without like soft tissue injuries, it seems good. I mean, maybe it isn't.
Yeah. But what's bad for this is that, you know, I'm projecting him as the top guy, and he's also, his assumed draft position is in the third round, the early third round. So that's just like, not, you can't get that excited. Walker has a little bit better draft position, but he gets nailed because of the lack of receptions. And this is a PPR based model that I have. But obviously the production is there on the ground.
If Walker goes in the fourth round to some team that likes to run the ball, that'll make me kind of excited. Because I mean, and also he was weird.
If he's going before the fourth round, right? I mean, I don't know.
You think he will?
I don't know. He's number one guy on these mock draft boards. I don't know how much you can rely upon that, but
I mean, he's a transfer running back who didn't really, I mean, I guess he scored 13 touchdowns for Wake Forest, but I don't know. I mean, and he didn't catch the ball a ton. Like, he does feel kind of an anachronistic style running back. Like, teams just don't value these guys who can't play on third downs all them. I mean, not that Kenneth Walker can't. What the fuck do I know? I don't know. It's not like I'm breaking down his hip fluidity or whatever, but the data would suggest he doesn't catch a ton of passes.
Yeah, he doesn't. I mean, I guess the retort to that is that Michigan State doesn't really throw it to backs generally. And I think
throw it that much at all, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's something to keep in mind, but you can't ignore it. You can't ignore the fact that that number is so much lower. And that's what causes him to be behind Hall and Spiller for me, despite having the highest assumed draft position. But the difference between 55 and 65 is not a huge, deal.
No, it's not. People like this Kyren Williams guy from Notre Dame. I've seen a little bit of buzz on him. He caught 42 passes his final season at Notre Dame. Like that, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, he's next for me after that, after the big three. Although again, we're really dropping low as far as like a percentile type of projection. I don't know if he can. I have his assumed weight at like 200 basically. So can he take a little bit bigger workload? I guess, does he have any potential of actually being a workhorse sort of guy in the NFL level? Probably not. And it kind of just seems like the lack of talent generally for running backs might push someone like him up to a point of like, is it really worth it?
Right. And it's also like, you know, the other thing is what team like needs a guy? Like what team is going to install a rookie this upcoming year to give him 200 touches? Like it doesn't, I mean, it's funny, like the name I always think of in this spot is like the Buccaneers, cause they let all their guys go. Right. Cause Rojo's out of contract. Fournette's out of contract. They just have Keyshawn Vaughn left.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least I mean, Keyshawn Vaughn actually did something. I was shocked. I was ready to write him off into team special teams. Maybe.
Well, because it doesn't matter. Right. I mean, that's what we know is these guys can be dead for 4 years. And if the team needs them, they break glass in case of emergency and they're fine. You know, like that's literally what we're learning.
What do you think about James Cook?
I mean, it's always tough with the guys who are in timeshares at the good schools. Right.
Yeah.
So he played at Georgia. He never got over 100 carries until his final season, and he didn't even lead the team in carries because Zamir White was there as well. So it's like, I don't know. Like, I literally don't know what to make of that profile of guy.
Yeah, because I don't have him, like, I have him about where he would be ranked just based upon an assumed draft position of like 100, basically. But I feel like he might be a little bit undervalued for the timeshare aspect. Maybe if we're talking about PPR, you know, he's someone who could be interesting if he could gobble up a lot of passes somewhere, see what he weighs, I guess, too. I'm assuming he's going to come in like at 190, which isn't great, but maybe that'll cause him to go in the like fifth round or something of the NFL draft. And then he could be really cheap. I don't know.
The another guy I've seen people get excited about is Tyler Allgeier, the BYU guy, who I think was a converted linebacker, which is just always interesting.
His numbers look good. Yeah. His numbers look good. I don't know. My just bomb scouting on him though is like he looks slow as shit. So I don't know, man. We'll see where he tests. He really did not look. Yeah, it wasn't pretty to me.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it's just not a good running back class at all. Is really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of who it reminded me of when I was watching. Who's the rookie who went to the Chargers who actually got some run? Not a lot though.
Larry Roundtree from Missouri.
Larry Roundtree. That's what reminded me of. It's like a guy who's productive, but then Roundtree's freaking pro day numbers were an abomination, and he still got carries in the NFL, but we saw that he couldn't do anything with them. So I don't know. It could be a similar thing here for Allgeier.
Do you have any preliminary thoughts on the quarterbacks?
Yeah. I mean, I've been just telling myself over and over again, not to get too invested in anyone here because I don't want to start to get invested or think I have to be invested in someone because I'm putting all this work into looking at them. And then you feel like it's a waste if you just come out at the end being like, everyone. But I kind of like Corral probably more than others do as being quarterback one. Although I think a lot of people saw him as potentially quarterback one. And now He didn't go to the Senior Bowl. He wasn't part of that whole process where it seems like Malik Willis jumped up. But he's a guy who's been productive multiple seasons. He has a decent amount of rushing production. Maybe right. He can't replicate that in the pros because he doesn't have that sort of athleticism, but he was able to do that. And he performed pretty well under pressure vis-a-vis what he did in from a clean pocket. It's just our grading doesn't like him a lot. Like the PFF grading for him under pressure is just absolutely trash, but his stats aren't that bad. So it all depends on, I think he might get overly dinged for being part of this QB friendly system. And those are guys I normally like, or ones who get like guys who are part of a QB friendly system and no one cares. Yeah. I might be wary of that, but when everyone is talking about how that's a problem, I start to like those guys.
What about, what does your guys' data have on Malik Willis?
Well, the thing with Willis is last season, he was just like a sack taking machine last season. So that really hurt his projections for me, but he didn't really do it the season before. So I don't know what happened year over year there. I think he looks okay. He's just inaccurate according to our charting. And for me, the big red flag was just, he's kind of like him and Howell are would be by far the worst guys that have been drafted in the first round. If they're drafted in the first round, as far as how much that they're taking sacks. And I kind of even figured out a way to sort it between what's the offensive line's fault and what's the quarterback's fault. And they're mostly just on the quarterback, what they've done. The only guy who's close is Justin Fields. And even then after that, no one is really close to have taken that many sacks in their final season.
You just had to throw the Justin Fields dig in there, didn't you?
Yeah, I gotta get one for Fields. I mean, you know what's funny about, okay, so I want to talk about the quarterback stuff for a little bit, is there's this general feeling, and I was having a conversation with some radio guy from Buffalo earlier today about, not that they're looking in the quarterback market and for the Bills, but just about like how there could be he thought there could be a bias towards quarterbacks being drafted too early. And I feel like, My new thing is, I think there's a bias against them being drafted early, unless they're one of these guys that people see as being a sure thing. Because let's think about Justin Fields, right? He was the 11th pick?
Yes.
11th pick, right? A lot of trash has been drafted in between, let's say, 10 and 15 in the NFL draft, guys that wash out after a couple of seasons, guys who go on to do nothing, guys who don't get a second contract. Sure. And nobody cares. Nobody even thinks about it. Nobody's like, oh, remember when that GM is forever tainted because he drafted, whoever
quarterbacks and wide receivers. People know when wide receivers flame out, but not some, middle linebacker.
Yeah. So that happens. And then, but yet we're going to like, Justin Fields is like, Justin Fields, everything's riding on Justin Fields. He has the 11th overall pick. It's not that big of a deal. They traded up to get him, so it's a little bit more complicated, but I just feel like teams should just be more willing to throw a pick at someone in the middle of the first round. If it doesn't work out, then just write it off. Like you write off another position not working out.
I mean, that was a big argument that Josh used to make when the Browns had all those picks in the first round. It's like, oh, you should just take two of them. Should have taken Baker and should have taken Lamar and just let them duke it out.
Well, I mean, Lamar didn't go till pick number 34. What if you took Baker and Sam Darnold
or Rosen or whoever?
Yeah. Then you would have been in trouble. Yeah, no, I get that, but I'm not even talking about premium sort of draft capital because they were drafting first and fourth, but even in the middle, like fourth. If you brick a non-quarterback at four, that looks pretty bad too. Okay, that looks that's going to look pretty bad too because you're going to be taking one of the top non-quarterback positions over with. But if you brick a guy at 15, I just feel like if someone drafts Malik Willis at 15, it's going to be like the front office's whole future is dependent upon what happens to Malik Willis. Whereas if you just draft some cornerback who, tears his ACL and then never plays for the rest of his career, no one will blink an eye as long as the team is doing okay.
Right. Yeah. That is a good point. All right. We can get you out of here. What can the people look forward to from Unexpected Points and NPFF over the next week?
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking, obviously, everything's all draft, all free agency all the time. So this week, There's the press coverage and off coverage articles I'm talking about for the next couple of days. Earlier this week, I had combine drills for every position, what matters or what doesn't matter, these scores that I build into it. Some pretty interesting takeaways because I'm putting 10-yard splits in there because we have all of that information. And that seems to be something that's probably more relevant to in almost all positions than the 40-yard dash, which gets a lot of hype. So I think that's a big takeaway from there. And maybe some of the agility stuff, but I think we're all kind of hip to that. But those are ones that are getting a decent amount of play out there because you can kind of be like your compendium to when you're watching along and what's going on at the combine is to see by position which particular drills seem to really matter. And unfortunately for the 40-yard dash, which is the marquee drill, it's just much, much more important for draft status than it is for NFL value, according to our metrics.
Yeah. Well, and it just, I mean, the 40-yard dash plays into the draft position, right? Is what we've come to learn. It's like,
Yeah. It's just whether or not that's going to be overvalued vis-a-vis what they're actually going to do. So especially running back, I feel like the 10 yard split ended up being a big thing. There were guys that I found in there. I mean, everyone was excited by someone like Aaron Jones because he had this overall athletic profile, but I thought the contrast from his 10 yard split to his 40 was pretty interesting because he had to basically, he ran a 4.56 at 208 pounds. So it was like a 50th percentile middling type of 40, but then his 10 yard split was a 96th percentile, how fast he was. And let's face it, like these guys are never running 30 yards, 40 yards down the field. It happens like once out of every 25 carries that they get. So it's stuff like that. I think that can be interesting when now that you have electronic timing on all this stuff, you can get some pretty accurate assessments of the shorter splits.
Yeah. All right, there we go, everyone.
All right.
Kevin Cole, Unexpected Points, Pro Football Focus, and we'll be back next week.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.